I've been asking people what they think will be different when the initial threat of this COVID-19 subsides. And most people suggest that at least for a time that we're going to continue with a greater degree of sanitation and prevention precautions more than we did prior to this pandemic. Some think that it's going to be quite a while before large events and big gatherings like ball games are permitted. It's been suggested that it will take a few months to recover economically, depending on the duration of the stay-at-home order. And some think that there'll be businesses that will not survive, but maybe new ones will start. Steps will likely be taken to be better equipped for future pandemics. So I think those are all good thoughts. But you know, the most striking and majority expectation I found when I was asking people about this is that life will go back to normal. That's what people desire. That's what we anticipate. We want to get back to normal. And it sounds to me, when people say that this event has predominantly been an inconvenience to us, rather than a time for serious reflection and evaluation. And I pray that we will not waste this calamity. I pray that we will seize this opportunity to grow and improve, because I believe normal is not working. I'm praying for some significant changes in me and in our world, because I don't want to return to normal. I want us to be far better than that. Some people that I interviewed expressed hope that people would indeed have a renewed appreciation for family and for community, and that would be great. Others have mentioned they hope all the goodwill and pulling together to help one another would become normalized, typical, instead of merely a crisis-stimulated act. And that too would be a great improvement. Most of all, I hope that people are turning to Jesus. That's what I want most. You know, this global pandemic causes uncertainty and separation, hardship and fear. We like to think that we're in control, but the truth is we are not. And events like this remind us that we're not in control. Perhaps we will use this time then to recalibrate and reconsider our priorities and values and appreciate our blessings and maybe help us draw closer to God. I believe that what the world really needs now is a word from Jesus. And thankfully, he's not silent. Jesus speaks into our lives. And through the series of messages that I want to begin this morning, we're going to listen to Jesus intently and let him give us perspective and equip us for life in a pandemic world. And while his words are certainly applicable in any time, any situation, any age, I think we'll find fresh challenge and nourishment in our current circumstances from what's been called the Sermon on the Mount. You can find that in Matthew's Gospel, chapters 5 through 7, if you want to open your Bibles there right now or your Bible apps. I'd like to begin this series by listening to the conclusion of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. It is delivered with three sets of two diametrically opposed choices. And the first choice is found in Matthew 7, starting with verse 13, where Jesus says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." And so we have a choice, two gates, two paths. Have you ever come to a fork in the road, maybe physically, literally, or in a sense in your life, and you're uncertain about which path to take? Years ago, a family loaned us their cabin for Brenda and me to have a week of vacation on Cheyenne Mountain overlooking Colorado Springs. Brenda's sister and a brother-in-law accompanied us, and we had an unforgettable time, spectacular sights that we saw, except the first night. We drove up this winding mountain road following the simple directions that we had been given from this family. And at a certain point, we were supposed to take a road off to the right. And we found what we thought was the correct road, but it was obviously not a well-traveled road. It was just a dirt road, and we weren't sure. Not only that, by the time we got up there, darkness had fallen, and so we couldn't see very well. We drove with uncertainty down this little road into the blackness, but we couldn't find the cabin. We drove back and forth on a few times, but we couldn't find a cabin. Finally, we figured we should go back out to the main road. Maybe we were on the wrong road. We had chosen the wrong path. So we went up the main road a bit more, looking for another road to the right with cabins and so, and we couldn't find that. So we came back to this first road. We went down it up and down, but still in the darkness, we could not find the cabin. So we guessed that we just must have the directions wrong. We're taking the wrong path somehow. So we went all the way back down the mountain. It's like a 30, 40-minute drive. We got a motel, had to pay for a motel, and then we tried again at daylight the next day. We went back up the mountain again, and there we found the same dirt road we had found the night before, and we went down there, and thankfully, we found the cabin. We were so glad. It was just another 50 yards beyond what we had ventured the night before. We just couldn't see it in the dark. We had the right road, but we felt foolish because we hadn't gone far enough. You know, finding and choosing the right path is imperative for life. Because we all know people who've chosen poorly, and their path has led them to heartbreak and hardship and sometimes ruin. But I also believe there's a lot of people who are strolling merrily along through life, enjoying the successes and all the good things the world has to offer, but they don't realize that the path they're going down is leading to nowhere. In fact, it's leading to destruction, Jesus says. And we don't even want to think that destruction is coming for some very nice people in our lives. I have an acquaintance who believes that really there's no right or wrong path, that everyone just follows their heart, and that's the right thing to do. And I challenge him, well, can your heart ever lead you astray? I mean, what if your heart tells you conflicts with what my heart is telling me is right? And we've got a collision there. And where does any sense of what is right and what is wrong, where does that come from in the first place? And he shut down the conversation right away because his belief was indefensible, and he realized that he didn't want to talk about it anymore. And Jesus made a jolting assertion in John's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 9, when he said, "I am the gate." Here in Matthew, he says, there's a gate and very few find it. He said, "I'm the gate, and whoever enters through me will be saved." Again, in John 14:6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Now we all know 2 plus 2 equals 4, and nothing else. There's not another correct answer. Approximate answers in math are wrong answers. And I'm afraid that many people are counting on an approximate gospel, an approximate judgment. But there's no approximate gospel. There is only one way. There's only one right answer: Jesus Christ. You have to drop all the baggage of your own ideas, your own accomplishments, your own successes and goodness and sincerity or intentions, whatever it is, because they're not going to fit through the gate. The gate is narrow. It's Jesus. And what is disconcerting about what Jesus says here is that most people have not chosen the single path that leads to life. Most people don't go through that gate. But the good news is that there is a doorway, a gateway that leads to life for anyone and everyone who would choose. It's Jesus. What the world needs now is Jesus. Over 30,000 people have died in the United States as a result of COVID-19 and about 150,000 worldwide. And when I look at what Jesus says here, it struck me that the majority of the people who have stepped into eternity as a result of this did not know Jesus. If what Jesus says is true, the majority did not know him. That's why our mission at Western Hills Church of Christ is to provide a foundation of hope and help people find new life, build new life in Christ. Our mission doesn't push pause because we're in the middle of the stay-at-home order. We are compelled to find some creative ways to communicate and keep leading people to that gate, to that pathway. It's Jesus. And one simple way is to invite as many as we can to watch these online messages. Get your friends, hey, we're doing this on Sunday. You watch from your house, I'll watch from mine, and we'll watch and talk about it together. Because I'm going to talk about Jesus, and they'll hear. In his book, Imperfect Disciple, Jared Wilson describes he was born in a turdy barn, grew up in a dirty world, got baptized in a muddy river. He put his hands on the oozing wounds of lepers. He went to dinner with dirtbags, both religious and irreligious. His closest friends were a collection of crude fishermen and cultural traders. He felt the spittle of the Pharisees on his face and the metal hooks of the jailer's whip in the flesh on his back. He got sweaty, dirty, and bloody. And he took all the sin and mess of the world on himself and onto the cross, to which he was nailed naked. In his work and in his words, Jesus is making promises to the beaten, the torn, the broken, the depressed, the desperate, the poor, the orphan, the abandoned, the cheated, the betrayed, the accused, the left behind, all of us who have sinned. And believe it or not, he's promising to fix it all. See, the gateway is for everyone, for anyone. An acquaintance of mine, a dear friend of Pam Eubanks from New York, is dying right now of COVID-19. And while I pray that he does not die a slow, wretched death, I'm thankful that he has entered safely already by the narrow gate. He has walked the path with Jesus for decades and loved the Lord, and his death is really only going to be a new beginning into a life more wondrous than we can imagine. And the only way to have that assurance is through Jesus Christ. It isn't Jesus what the world needs now? Even with the threat of a killer virus like COVID-19, we don't have to be afraid because we've chosen the path of Jesus. And some argue, man, Dan, that is so narrow. That is so exclusive. And I say, yeah, it is. That's true. But it's better than no way out. It's better than having no hope. I'm thankful for his grace, for which I don't deserve. I'm glad to step through that gate. And I'm going to take as many with me as I possibly can. We have another choice, especially in times like these, that has to do with the kind of person that will be evidenced in the fruit of our lives. I want you to look at verses 15 through 20. Jesus says, "Watch out for the false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. And by their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, and a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them." And so we have another choice, two trees. Now, Jesus has already clarified that there's only one way into the kingdom. It's through him. He's the path. He's the gate. And now he wants us to be on guard against these false teachers who may come in among us and suggest there are other ways into the kingdom. And you know what? He calls them wolves in sheep's clothing because they appear harmless. They appear to be one of us, have our best interests at heart, but they can lead good people astray. They devour the unsuspecting. For example, you know some of the nicest people that you have met in the Lord's church may deny the eternal lordship of Jesus. That's a profound thing. That's an important thing, getting the identity of Jesus right. Some Bible scholars also believe that the miracles of Jesus are just inspirational stories. Jesus didn't really do those things. Those things are just to teach us and inspire us. There are other teachers who add to the gospel certain stipulations, requirements, or things. Sometimes they add sensational experiences that they want everybody to have. So that's how you know you're truly spiritual. And still others claim that they have the same authority as Jesus. And so they want you to follow Jesus and them. And many today suggest that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you believe, as long as you're sincere. Maybe as long as you believe in Jesus, but anything else, it's all good. And Jesus employs a metaphor of trees, saying that you can identify a false teacher by their fruit. That's one of the things that will distinguish them. Because good trees bear good fruit, and bad trees bear bad fruit. But good trees won't bear bad fruit, and bad trees can't bear good fruit. And Jesus' words here are strong. The bearers of bad fruit are cut down and burned. Man, that is judgment talk. So don't get sucked in because a teacher has a whole lot of charisma and seems to be so nice. Examine the fruit of his character and her life. I remember a scholarly guy, a Bible teacher that I once knew years ago, who could sound quite knowledgeable in the Word. I knew his reputation as a Bible teacher, but when I encountered him, something seemed a little off. And, you know, the things he said sometimes even seemed a little bit inappropriate. But he had successfully duped a whole lot of people. But eventually, the truth about him came out. He had a secret, immoral life. He was a deceiver. He was a manipulator. He was a church divider. His family fell apart. The evidence that this man can't be trusted was in his life. But then Jesus goes a step further in his next words, verse 21 and following. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? And then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Depart from me, you evildoers. Hard words. These are words of harsh judgment. And they apply to the false teachers who might have appeared to be doing good things, but truth was they were not aligned with Jesus. But there's an extent to which this teaching applies to all of us because we all have a choice of what path we will choose and what teachers we will listen to and what kind of tree we will be. Because when we're truly walking with Jesus, he's going to be evident in our lives. That relationship is going to be obvious that we're walking with him, that we know him. I'm not talking about those syrupy, artificial folks who can say all the right things. I mean, sometimes they're spewing things. They talk like a Christian greeting card. You know what I mean? They're just all syrupy. And they rarely miss church. They give dutifully. They live uprightly. And they're trying to get everybody else to live uprightly. But somehow they've missed the whole point. It's not about the externals. It's not about our appearance. The question is, do they really know Jesus? Is he alive in them? Is it he who is evident in their lives and yours? Someone suggested, you know, we may be surprised who's not in heaven. Jill Briscoe penned this poem. I dreamt death came the other night, and heaven's gates swung wide. An angel with a halo bright ushered me inside. And there to my astonishment stood folks I judged and labeled as quite unfit, as of little worth, as spiritually disabled. Indignant words rose to my lips, but never were set free. For every face showed stunned surprise. No one expected me. Friends, what the world needs now are people who follow Jesus, people who know him, people like you and me who genuinely know Jesus and are living it, and he's evident in us. We need more of the fruit of abiding in Christ right now more than ever. Christians are needed who will help others walk with Jesus as well. What the world needs now is to know that the gate of life is Jesus, and the way to walk with him is to produce good fruit. And then in this passage, Jesus gets the most familiar imagery that people know from Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. Therefore, he said, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine, but does not put them into practice, is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And it fell with a great crash. And so we have a choice again, this time of two foundations for our life. Have you noticed that many of Jesus' parables contrast two or more types of people, or sometimes it employs a metaphor to make that point? For example, there's the parable of the soils, where some of the gospel seed falls on hard soil. And some falls on rocky soil, and some falls in among the weeds, but some of the seed falls on fertile soil, and it flourishes, produces fruit. Or there's the parable of the two sons. Remember this one, where the one son is rebellious, he runs off, squanders his inheritance, but in shame, he finally returns, and he's welcomed home, and he's restored as a son. While the other brother has remained faithful all this time, and he complains when his brother returns, and they throw a party and welcome him home. See, by placing two side by side, we can compare the elements in the story that are the same, and at the same time contrast the elements that are different. And Jesus does that here in Matthew 7, obviously. We have two houses built. That's the same between the two houses. And in fact, we're all constructing our homes, our lives, right? And he also says both houses experience storms. This parable does not teach, be sure you find a place to build your house where there are no storms. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying storms are inevitable. They're coming. They're coming to all of us. And this is a part of the teaching we don't like. We don't want to hear this because we live in a COVID-19 world, and Jesus is aware of that. Things are going to rattle us. Things are going to shake us. The primary variable, though, in this story is the permanence of each foundation and its ability to sustain the house. The second variable here is intimately linked with the first, and that is our choice of foundation. You know, you can look at actual houses built today without a sufficient foundation, and in the pictures here you can see they're falling off the cliff. They're losing the house. A house may be beautiful in appearance on the outside, on the inside, but without a solid foundation, it can't survive. It's going to go down. Or here's the famous structure Without a solid foundation, you know, the Great Tower of Pisa. This week, Governor Cuomo of New York said on C-SPAN regarding the latest coronavirus stats. He said, "We brought the number down. God did not do that." Whoa. Last man who said that was eaten by worms, King Herod. When Nebuchadnezzar said something like that, man, he went mad and he lived like an animal in the field for a long period of time as part of God's judgment on him. How dangerous, how arrogant, how insulting to disregard the millions of prayers to God over this virus, and how foolish to forget who gave knowledge to the scientists and the officials who are dealing with all this. Man, that's being on a shaky foundation. Are you building on Jesus? He is the only solid rock. More specifically, as Jesus puts it, are you hearing, and not just hearing, are you obeying Jesus? Are you putting into practice his words? In fact, his warning reminds me of James chapter 1, verse 22. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Are you applying it? See, if you do not choose to build your whole life, to live your life upon the foundation of Jesus and his word, then what do you propose to build your life on? And this is a critical question. It's paramount. It's a foundational issue. Jesus said, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." Jesus said, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine. Jesus said, truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and does not come to judgment, but has passed out of death into life. Jesus said, truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. The world needs to build on the words of Jesus, to know his words and to live it out. You know, I was amused when a Facebook friend posted all these rules from officials that we've been getting during this pandemic, how we're supposed to do things. And just in case anyone's confused about any of these rules, let me go through a few of them with you. I mean, here's what we've been hearing. Only essential people should be at work. Only essential people, right? Or basically, you can't leave the house for any reason. But if you have to, then you can. Or this one. Masks are useless, but you should wear one. It may or may not save you. And gloves won't help, but they can still help. So wear gloves, but if you do wear gloves, don't touch anything because you could transfer the virus. Or they say, all stores are closed except for those that are open. And you shouldn't go to hospitals unless you have to go there. Don't go if you think you have the virus. Stay at home unless you're dying. Then when it's too late, go. Or This rule. This virus is deadly, but it's still not scary. Don't be scared, except that sometimes it actually leads to death and global disaster. Everyone needs to stay home, but it's important to get out there and take a walk, go someplace. There is no shortage of groceries in the supermarket, but there are many things missing when you get there. So maybe you ought to try going early in the morning sometimes. The virus has no effect on children except those that it affects. you have many symptoms when you're sick, but you can also get sick without symptoms. But you can have symptoms without being sick, or be contagious without having symptoms. you can't go to retirement homes. You should stay away from the elderly, but You should take care of the elderly and bring food and medication to them. You know, if you're sick, you can't go out, but you can go to the pharmacy. You can get restaurant food and groceries delivered right to your house, which may have been prepared by contaminated people. And I like this. Wash your hands. Wash your hands for 20 seconds or more. But there's no soap available. Now, I share that just for fun, just because we need to laugh a little bit. I highly respect our officials who are doing their best in these impossible times and providing actually excellent guidelines, trying to protect all of us. And we should do our best to comply with what they're saying. Even so, you have to admit, the authorities, all these rules, they can get a bit confusing and conflicting because they come from imperfect people with limited wisdom, right? But notice the response of Jesus' listeners in the last two verses of this chapter, verses 28 and 29. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. Jesus knows what he's talking about. We better pay attention to him. Suppose you're a commercial pilot for a major airline, you're flying major routes, maybe you even get to go to exotic, fun destinations at times, and it's just a good life. You've done all the training, you've worked very hard to get where you are today, and now you're experiencing your dream career, and you're paid well for it, providing for your family, you have respect and responsibility in your position, and you're doing what you love. But one day, just in a routine health check, you're informed that you have high blood pressure, and so you're grounded. And they tell you perhaps you can do some public relations for the airlines, and maybe you can give talks to aspiring pilots, but your flying days, they're over. Friend, if you were building your life on your career, you just had a crash landing. You know? And I think sometimes we build on wrong things. I recall visiting a man in the hospital, and he was so very angry. He was fit to be tied, I used to say. He had just retired a few days before, and he and his wife had these great retirement plans of travel and grandkids and all kinds of things. And now he had just gone for a checkup, and he's diagnosed with this vicious, deadly cancer, and he vehemently exclaimed, "I spent my whole life working so hard, saving up, living rightly, so that we could spend wonderful years in retirement, and this is what I get. It's not fair." And yeah, he died within a few weeks. He built everything on a faulty foundation. Maybe another person is building their life on family. And that sounds good and noble. And so they pour into their family to make a good life for them and to make their family happy and to make it a safe life for their family. Kids and grandkids mean everything to them. But the truth is, you can't make your kids happy. They can't make you happy. You can't make them 100% safe. You can't give your family meaning, and you can't rely on them to give you meaning. And I know one thing for sure, no family can save you. Wrong foundation. My friend Jeff Fall challenged, if you build your house on economic security, sand. If you build your house on physical health and strength, sand. If you build your house on pleasure and fulfillment, sand. If you build your house on government, sand. If you build your house on personal liberty, sand. If you build your house on another person or family or people, sand. If you build your house on socialism, capitalism, or any ism, sand. If you build your house on religious tradition or ritual or rule keeping, sand. If you build your house on intellect and education and ability, sand. If you build your house on feelings and opinions, sand. If you build your house on military might, sand. If you build it on material wealth and possessions, sand. If you build your house on your own righteousness and wisdom, sand. Blaise Pascal was a physicist, a mathematician, a Christian of some order, and he wrote, "To win people to Christian faith, we must show that our faith is not contrary to reason. We must show that it's venerable so that it will inspire respect." And by venerable, he means that your belief has a good effect on your life. You know, your life becomes evidence of your faith. In other words, it'll be a house that can withstand storms. My friends, people are watching you. They are. What difference does your walk with Christ have on the way that you're managing this pandemic? What the world needs now is an unshakable foundation that can withstand the threat of illness, the loss of economy and community, the surge of loneliness, boredom, fear, and depression. Everyone in the world needs a house that will stand even when death comes to us, so that we will live forever in glory with Christ. The world needs us to show them what that kind of house looks like and how to build on a solid foundation. We have great opportunity and responsibility. The world needs Jesus. We all get to choose. We get to choose the gate we go through or the path that we're going to walk on. We get to choose the kind of tree that we will be and the fruit that we will produce in our lives. We get to choose the foundation upon which we will build. And each of those choices has a profound, eternal consequence or blessing. You get to choose. Choose wisely. Choose Jesus.